Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Hello, hello.
Oh, where's the hot stuff?
It got it went out when my computer hard drive crashed.
Oh, well, I don't care about your hard drive. All I care about is the hot stuff drop. So
you can talk to whoever did that drop. She who shall remain nameless.
Okay.
Welcome to the Fansmanship Podcast.
Welcome.
Episode, what is it, 68 now, I think, today? I think 67 was the last one.
Yeah.
So the big 6-8. It is, Wednesday? And Andy Stevens is in the house. And I'm in the house, Owen Main. And we're missing Luke Johnson, who I guess decided to...
He's trying to get a truck appraised or something. I don't know.
He found his dream truck, okay? And I think it's a 68 Chevy. And I'll let him talk about it next time and try to defend himself. But I don't know if there is any
He's
defending...
He's going to have to defend himself.
I don't know if there is any defending yourself when it comes to missing a podcast
last minute. You know, a couple hours out. I might get my dream truck today. Gonna have to miss again. Well, but it's all right.
Yeah, it's not exactly like the clutchest moment in the world.
But we have plenty of other people to talk about, other things to talk about. So
we're really excited today. We have two of our writers who have been writing now for a little while from the LA area. And we've been wanting to have some of our other writers on the podcast. And here we are. And finally, we are able to make it happen. We're going to have Diane Tanwakio. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She's going to be on in our second segment today. But in our first segment, we have a man who goes by none other than Screamy. That's what Matt Screamo McScreamy.
Screamy McScreamo.
Levine. Matt, what's going on?
Not much, just hanging out. And yeah, I do go by McScreamy.
McScreamy.
That is my nickname.
How did that start?
It's a long story. Back in high school, one of my friends came up with the name, and I just kind of stuck with it.
Got it. Was that because you were a screamer, like, fan at the basketball games, kind of the insane fan?
No, it's my music choice. I listen to pretty heavy music, so my friends make fun of me.
Ah, like screamer music.
Yeah, screamer music.
Like OTEP?
No, it's more like I don't even know what kind of bands to describe it. Like maybe Slipknot kind of.
Got it.
Okay, kind of like Festering Stump. Is that the name of a band? Festering Stump? Ooh, so it's kind of like that kind of stuff.
Basically.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, Matt, you're in L.A., and you've been writing for us for what, like almost a year now, I would
yeah,
guess.
Something like that.
Since like...
Yeah, I think I started in like November
last year. Yeah, so I guess it's been like 6 or 8 months. It seems like longer just because you're relatively prolific as far as the stuff that you put out. A lot of it's focused on LA sports. So talk about kind of your sports allegiances. Where do they come from? I know you're a big LA sports fan, a lot like Andy and I, actually. So tell me a little bit about where you got those allegiances and what are your teams?
Well, I have been a diehard Laker and Dodger fan since I was a young kid. My dad was one, so he kind of brought me up as one. And I've loved those two teams since I was little. Just I can't get enough of them. No matter what they do to raise my blood pressure or anything, I can't stop loving those two teams, no matter what. As for my football team, since L.A. doesn't have a team, I resorted to the Cincinnati Bengals because my mom's from Ohio, and I used to love Chad Johnson when he went to Oregon State, and I kind of just followed him into the NFL and where he went to the Bengals, and I just kind of stuck with them. And they're on the run. I think they're going to make a jump this season, hopefully.
Yeah. Did you hear about, speaking of Chad Johnson or Ocho Cinco, whatever.
I think he's back to Johnson now.
He's back to Johnson. Well, yeah, because he's been in court. Well, he's been locked up, actually. He got let out of jail because he got sentenced for a month because he was held in contempt of court for slapping his lawyer on the ass for doing a good job. What exactly happened there?
Typical Chad, right?
Yeah, yeah. So how about college sports? Any interest in maybe the UCLA, USC? What side of that fence do you stand on?
I'm more of like neutral towards college sports. Like I kind of just watch for just the joy of it. But if I had to pick a team, it'd probably be USC, just because my dad was a USC fan also. So I kind of just grew up with that, and I've always kind of liked the Trojans. So if I had to pick, it'd be the Trojans.
Right. Okay. So let's get back to baseball, because that's kind of the season that's in mid-swing right now, no pun intended. Yasiel Puig, what do you think of the phenomenon that is Puig, and do you think that this will help the Dodgers to even a chance at the pennant or even a wild card spot, the insurgents and the firecracker that is Puig?
Can he get out of last place
is the question, Matt.
Yeah, like, he is a remarkable talent. Like, literally, I haven't seen a player like this, especially on the Dodgers, in forever. Like, I mean, going back, looking at their last maybe, like, 20 years even, they haven't had a player that's electrified, like, just the franchise. Like, if you go to Dodger Stadium, anytime he comes up to bat, the fans are loud, they're excited. Like, even if the Dodgers are getting creamed by, like, 10 runs, he goes up to bat, or even in the field, the fans go crazy for him.
Right.
But as for the team as a whole, I want to say that they can make a run to try to get back in this thing, but all the constant injuries, and then the bullpen, and just don't even get me started on Brandon Lee. Like, I have had enough of him.
He needs to go. He is the most wanted on Dodger fans' gripe list.
I feel like for a while Matt Kemp, provided some of that spark or was able to bring some of that excitement to Chavez Ravine, but I think the presence that Puig brings, especially after that first week, it's almost like a Barry Bonds kind of a thing where you don't want to miss an at bat. Barry Bonds, like circa 2001, 2002, where every time he comes up, you're going to glue your eyes to the screen, whether you're a Dodger fan or not, trying to see what this guy's going to do next. And even when he's out in the field, there was a throw. One of my Giant fan coworkers was like, I saw that throw from right field to third base that was just on a line.
Oh, yeah.
Where the third baseman didn't move his glove. And, you know, the guy was out by about a half a step only. I mean, it was a bang, bang play, and not a play that, you know, probably 9 out of 10 outfielders in the majors could make.
And well, really, if you think about it and put it to some, you know, recent historical perspective, I guess, Vladimir Guerrero might be the closest thing to that.
I agree.
How about that throw that he made from right field to get the guy back at first base to end the game, one of the first games that he played?
That was his first game, yeah.
Yeah, that was his first game. Yeah.
Where he threw out the run to end the game.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Who would you most compare him to? Is a guy like Raul Mondesi even in the same sentence, or is this El Cañon 2.0, 2.5?
I feel like he's his own kind of player, though. Like, everyone wants to compare, like, these new players that come up to these older players, but I feel like this kid is his own type of player.
Right.
Like, he has all – I think he's literally like a 5-tool player. He can hit, he can throw, he can catch, he has speed, like, literally. I don't really see a flaw in his game, maybe except for his, like – maybe, like, I don't even know really
– His maturity?
Yeah, his immaturity maybe. But that's also because he's only 22 years old.
Yeah, and he will learn, I think, hopefully, over time – when to take that extra risk and when not to. It's a long season. He seems to go hard, and there was, you know, sometimes maybe a little too hard, slide into first base, things like that. If he's going to be a franchise player,
And Luke was mad at me for comparing him to Mike Trout, but what I will say is the same about both of them is that at the Puig's, I think, a little bit older than Trout, actually. He's like 22 and Trout's still 21 or something like that. But I think in 5 to 8 years, both of those guys are going to be not big stolen base threats. Both of those guys are going to be like Torii Hunter, like 15 to 20 kind of stolen base guys. Yeah. I don't see their bodies holding up enough to allow them to continue to steal bases. I mean, a lot like Matt Kemp, I would say. Kemp 3 years ago, you said, man, this guy's going to steal 40 bases forever. No, actually, he's not. He's a power hitter. He's getting older. Baseball players get old now. They didn't for a while because of PEDs, but I feel like they get old now. They get old when they turn, you know, 29, 30 years old. They start to be on the decline. And so,
well, you guys look at Gonzalez. Like, I mean, he's still a great player, but he's lost a lot of his power from, like, 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
Yep, absolutely.
And people want to kind of make the Dodger Stadium excuse, I guess you could say, but he was hitting, 30-plus home runs in Petco, which is more cavernous than Dodger Stadium. Yeah. So,
and they had to move the fences in, I think, at Petco even a little bit. Matt, I know you're a big I talked to Andy about this before the podcast today, but Andy, I would describe as kind of the biggest and he'll probably take offense to this, the biggest like Lakers apologist out of us three, out of me, him, and Luke.
I would agree with that.
I'm a big Laker fan, and I'll root like anybody else will when the Lakers beat the Kings in Game 7, a game we actually talked about last week with the guys from the Slow Late Show. I had my Shaq jersey on, and I ran around the streets of La Jolla with waving a number one, waving my number one
your
finger,
big number one phone finger
down the streets.
You were only wearing your jersey. No.
Let's not go there. Yeah. But I think I told Andy, I said, I think Matt's a bigger Laker apologist than you are, even, Andy. What do you think, Matt? I know you look at things through purple and gold glasses quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the Dodgers. I love the Bengals. But for me, the Lakers are always going to be my top team because basketball is my favorite sport. I literally analyze every little aspect of every team, but especially the Lakers.
Right.
I just, I don't know, just that's been my thing, so.
Well, that's where you have the most to say, so,
I have some questions then.
All right.
The big news today was that I saw, the rumor mill as it pertains to the Lakers and the Clippers, actually, was that the Clippers could get Dwight Howard from the Lakers in return for, Blake Griffin and Eric Bledsoe. Is that a move that you would make if you were the Lakers?
If Dwight Howard does not want to be in Los Angeles as a Laker, but he wants to go to the Clippers for whatever reason in his mind, I say ship him down the hall and take Griffin and Bledsoe, because Griffin provides athleticism and youth, something the Lakers need, and so does Bledsoe.
Everything right. Dwight Howard has, except you have two guys that have it, I think, rather than one, right?
But Griffin's also younger than Howard. Right. Howard's 27, 28, I think.
Yeah,
yeah. 3-4 years, who even knows next season? He might not even be the same player he ever was in Orlando.
And it could also be argued that, Griffin's still on his way up. He hasn't found his peak yet, and Howard could very well have found his peak and could be on his way down.
Yeah, exactly. So. And Griffin, I mean, don't get me wrong. Griffin, I don't like the Clippers. I will admit that. Just because they're a great team. I'm proud for them that they won. I just don't like their cocky attitude with everything. That's one thing I will say.
The Chris Paul attitude?
Griffin, yeah, kind of.
No, but it's more of an attitude of their fans. It's almost understandable at some level, although it is very annoying for these fans to start even trying to, talk to Laker fans about certain things. But, they've never won anything before, so you could see where maybe they are getting a little bit overexcited. No,
but at least what I've seen is Griffin has improved his game every year. He has gone, everyone's like, oh, he can't shoot at all. Now he can at least kind of make a jump shot.
Right.
But so I'm saying, if the Lakers were to end up making that deal for Griffin and Bledsoe, we would also be able to put Powell back at the five, which is his main, which is where he thrives the most.
Right.
Such He's 7 Dan feet Tony's tall. System. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then also we get a young point guard in Bledsoe who he's pretty good. He plays defense, he can shoot, he can run the floor.
And he's younger than Griffin.
Building block.
And he's he's 21, 20, something like that. I mean, he's still very young.
He's 22, yeah.
Yeah, and he would be a nice piece for them moving forward at the point guard spot.
He is going to be a starter. I believe that on any other team besides the Clippers, Bledsoe
would
I listen to a lot of Bill Simmons, and he has Clippers season tickets, and he talks about Bledsoe as being really a really big piece, and having been tutored by Chris Paul for a couple of years, I think Bledsoe is primed, if he goes to another team, to be a breakout kind of player,
Well, he was a breakout player last year when he filled in for Paul. Well,
that's what I'm saying.
He was one of the most added fantasy basketball players in the entire
Westbrook athleticism. Yeah. I mean, he really does.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say he reminds me of a poor man Russell Westbrook, kind of.
He's a little smaller, but he's strong, man. Yeah, he's built for a little guy. He is built and fearless. And I think the Lakers need to get more. I mean, since they've had Kobe, and I think Trevor Ariza was the closest thing they had to it, but they've really lacked athletic wing players or athletic guards besides Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
And Kobe isn't athletic anymore. I mean, he's got a torn Achilles. Even if he comes back at the beginning of next year, he's not going to be a high flyer. He's going to be the Michael Jordan in his prime jump shooter
fadeaway. Michael Jordan on the Wizards, Jordan.
Well, no, like maybe the last year on the Bulls even, right? He's not going to be dunking on a lot of guys.
Uh-huh.
Maybe since I say that, maybe he will because everybody's saying that's Kobe's brain.
Look at Kobe. I mean, yeah,
he hurt himself again if he tries
Achilles,
to do that.
But look at him last year. No one thought he could do what he did as far as dunking. There were some dunks
So my point is, though, that the Lakers have really gone the way of, like, non-athletic guards.
Yeah,
and they've had to because they have no salary cap, and they always draft at the bottom of the first round. They always trade their first-round picks. And so they've ended up with guys like Derek Fisher in the waning, you know, whatever of his career, Steve Blake, you know, meta world piece at the three.
Well, the good thing about adding a guy like Bledsoe is then you wouldn't – it would be – Nash, Bledsoe, Blake. You wouldn't have to worry about these, you know, Maurice Morris, Andrew Gaudelock type of guys to fill in.
And even Gaudelock, he could shoot a little bit, but he's not an NBA. I mean, he's not an NBA starter or a guy who should be getting significant minutes in the NBA.
On a potential NBA champion. No, he's not top 12. So.
No, not at all. And so when you look at that, I really think the Lakers have to improve in a lot of places that aren't their top three or four players, if they think they're going to have a chance at being a contender. You look at the Spurs right now, and we'll talk about that in a second. You look at the Spurs right now, and you have guys like, is it Hill? And Hill?
No, Hill went to Indiana.
Not Hill. I'm picturing
Gary Neal.
Gary Neal and no, the guy who made all those threes.
Danny Green.
One of those short names. Yeah. So I'm watching Danny Green the other night, and I'm thinking to myself, this is what Trevor Ariza was on that Lakers team that beat the Magic. It's a guy who can just knock down threes when he's open and lets other guys, you know, not be helped on, like Tony Parker. You know, on that Lakers team, it was Kobe, you know, who the Magic couldn't help on in the finals because Trevor Ariza was going to knock down a three if he was open. A guy who can guard the best player on the other team, the most athletic player on the other team.
Right.
And
so Kobe doesn't have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And Meta's not that. Meta can't do either of those things.
Not really anymore, unfortunately.
Right? And so don't they have to look for some kind of length, like even like a Devin George type would be something they just don't have right now, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And like, as going back to this, like the whole Clipper thing, I mean, honestly, I'm kind of sick of the whole Dwight Howard thing. Like, the dude got ejected in his final game at home. I mean, it was a blowout game, but still, you need to try to fight for your team. That's a horrible like image right there. Like, if he really leaves the Lakers, that is going to be the biggest mistake he ever does. And I will gladly take Blake Griffin and Bledsoe if we can.
Sure. Well, I just don't understand why if he wants to be a Laker, as soon as they asked him, he should have said, "Where is it? Okay, I get max money, max years for what the league will allow because that's what the Lakers will offer him. Where's the dotted line? So what is the business advantage of holding out like this? I don't understand. If he doesn't want to be a Laker, fine.
I think it's an interesting like psychological study when you think about Dwight Howard. He you know, came out of high school. He was one of the last guys to come out of high school into the NBA. By all accounts, you know, had what he needed while he was in Atlanta, went to, you know, the nice school in Atlanta, high school wise. Doesn't seem like a guy who's wanted for a lot, I don't know his past very clearly, but you look at other big men who have been successful and they seem like they're guys who've had to claw a little bit at some point. Even Shaq, growing up, you know, he was a guy who had a little bit of a blue collar attitude. And Dwight is like the athletic big man that doesn't have that kind of an attitude. KG, you know, he has a blue collar attitude. He's gonna get a little bit dirty and feisty. Dwight Howard just doesn't seem to have that in him. He seems like he's easily mentally rattled at times. He doesn't really know what he wants. No, it's okay. He doesn't really know what he wants.
Yeah.
And that comes through on the court personality wise. It comes through off the court when he tries to think about where he wants to be next year. And I think until he figures out what he really wants and commits to that, then, you know, he's always going to be this kind of top 20 player, up and down, mediocre. You know, what I thought of Pau Gasol before he joined the Lakers, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Matt.
See, Howard has, throughout his entire career, too, Howard has these random games where when you see him, he looks angry and, like, and then when he does that, he is a force to be reckoned with on the court.
Right.
No one can stop him. But it's like he doesn't do this every game for some reason. I don't understand it. Like, look at Shaq. Shaq every game. I mean, he may not have set numbers every night, but he still, like, was angry.
Well, it'd be interesting to find out what that is exactly that does motivate Howard. That's what, if I mean, Kobe anything. Should try to figure that out.
And Kobe's the ultimate, you know, you look at guys like Kobe or Jordan or any of those guys who have been really great and kind of dominators over time, even Magic. Those weren't guys who took nights off. Those were guys who found ways to get motivated every day. I remember Andy and I actually went to high school together, and there's a high school coach we had. He used to talk to us about making up stories in our minds about the opponents and thinking about, you know, what's going to get you, like, actually mad at the opponents at some level. Like, not that you're going to, like, hurt them or not like them after the game, but you got to psych yourself up and motivate yourself to not just play well for yourself sometimes, but have a little bit of a killer instinct. And unlike Kobe Bryant, Dwight Howard doesn't really seem to have that instinct.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Matt. We really appreciate the time, and we'll look for more writing this summer on the Dodgers and Lakers. Matt Levine, thanks again, and we'll have you on soon.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right, sounds good, guys.
Have you guys ever wanted to be up in the stars, looking down from the moon? Well, that's where I am right now. I'm up in the stars. I'm in the moon. I'm somewhere where no one's ever been before besides the astronauts. I'm here. You're down there. Ooh. Thank you very much.
So, welcome back to the Fansmanship.com podcast. And that's Fansmanship with two A's.
And we're back on the Fansmanship Podcast, episode 68. We had Matt Levine.
3 years into retirement. Feels good.
3 years into retirement?
Yeah.
For who?
65.
Oh,
after 65.
Okay. I was very confused. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for bringing me up to speed. We had one of our writers, Matt Levine, on a second ago, and we talked a little bit about the Lakers and the Dodgers and where he got his fansmanship from. I have a lot of questions for our next writer. She's our newest writer and one of our best already. We've received a lot of positive feedback, and we're thrilled to have Diane on. Diane, pronounce your last name for me.
Tanwakio.
See, I was saying Tanwakio. Tanwakio. What kind of a last name is that?
It's Filipino.
Awesome.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Yeah. So, Diane has written a lot about the NBA. I know you're a big NBA fan, Diane. Talk a little bit about how you got into being such a big fan of basketball. And you're a League Pass owner, too. So tell me how that is to be a League Pass subscriber.
Yeah, so I grew up watching basketball. Basketball and professional wrestling were the two main sports that our family watched. And so I grew up watching Hakeem, on the Rockets. And, you know, I feel like a lot of my personality was modeled after the Glove and those Seattle teams. And so,
really? Gary Payton, huh? Wow. Kind of,
it's really just kind of, you know, percolated from there.
And what about, like, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair?
Oh, Oh, you know, that whole thing with Owen Hart, you know, Bret Hart, all that stuff, Shawn Michaels. All of that was, you know, pretty integral to growing up in our family.
So was it just WWF, or how about like NWO? I remember I had a lot of friends that were into that back when we were in high school.
Yeah, when WCW came around, got a lot of viewership in our house,
the
too.
NWO, brother.
The evil Hulk Hogan?
I'm sorry?
The evil Hulk Hogan?
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely. So when we grew up, you know, my brother's practicing, you know, the figure four, all of those types of moves.
On you, or just...
was he practicing the figure four on you?
Me and my sister, for sure.
So you have a brother and a sister. Are you the oldest, the youngest?
Two older brothers and a younger sister. Definitely grew up in a sports family.
Yeah. So you had to grow up being tough with some older brothers. And I know you're from the Bay Area, but not all of your team allegiances lie there, right? Or do they?
You know, my main team allegiance has to be the Warriors, so the Bay. But when I moved down here to L.A. 9 years ago, I kind of adopted the Clippers just because the thought of, you know, living in a city where, you know, the Lakers were everybody's main interest, like, I couldn't stand that. So I took the Clippers a little bit, but when... You know, the Clippers and the Warriors are playing each other. It's really just no contest.
I gotcha. Yeah, my little brother lives up north. He's a big Warrior fan, too. So
yeah, talk about what the Warriors have done over the last couple of years. I know they got new ownership, and there was a lot that was said negatively about the past ownership, going through a lot of different coaches, not really sure who was in charge when Chris Mullin was kind of running things up there and some other things. Talk about kind of the development of that franchise and where they're headed.
I think, you know, the identity of the Warriors has to be, you know, the fans. You know, the fans who really have just gotten, I think, their due in the past year or two as, you know, having been there through thick and thin. I think that last year they did get a little bit of a bad rap after, you know, the whole booing incident when Chris Mullin was having his number retired. And all of that with the with the ownership trading away Monte Ellis, and so I think that the Warriors' identity has to be tied to, you know, the loyalty of the fans, and I think that's really, they've really been getting their due in the last season or two. And I think that Mark Jackson is the right coach definitely for right now with the young squad that they have. I think that they really have to keep some of these veterans that. Really kind of gave them their swagger and their toughness. You know, the Jared Jacks, the Carl Landrys, that kind of thing. But they have a really great
David
thing
Lee.
Going right now.
Yeah.
And so they really are in a precarious place in terms of building for the future. You know, is someone like David Lee, who is, you know, a workhorse and a good 2010 threat, who, you know, doesn't really play great defense and isn't really a great rebounder and a box-out player, you know, is he someone that you really are banking on, you know, for the next several years? You know, is Curry staying healthy? You know, all of that stuff. So they're really in an interesting, a precarious, but exciting, you know, direction right now. And so really just kind of watching them right now is pretty thrilling.
Yeah. It's definitely fun. And they're kind of an up-tempo team when they want to be. They're definitely guard oriented and play kind of a winning style that people like. I think Mark Jackson has come in and really done a lot with the culture there. But when you're a team like them or the Clippers, and you've made the step from, maybe if there's like four levels of teams, you've made the step from, you know, 1 to 2 or even 1 to 3 over the last few years.
Sure.
You know, from a absolute bottom feeder to like a playoff contender to somebody who can win a playoff series. There's a big chasm, I think, in the NBA between kind of the step 3 and 4. If 4 is the highest you can
right.
go,
well, I think
if 4 is Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Miami,
especially
maybe,
a young team
a
like that.
Teams.
Though in the NBA, it seems like once you get there, you kind of stay there for a while. But, they're not going to not make the playoffs next year. I don't think.
But they got there. A
they
few
might
years
take
ago.
A little step back, possibly. It's tough to, you know, just expect to go further than that when it's only your first time in the dance, but. I don't see them fall. I mean,
they won that playoff series a few years ago with Monte Ellis and who else was on that team? Was Fisher on that Warriors team? I don't even know, but they had a lot of players who were exciting players, Al Harrington and some of those guys. They won that playoff series, and then they kind of fell off afterwards. They didn't come back and have a great season the next year. So I think that's always the risk you run
when you have such a young team. You know? Well, I mean, you know.
I think that...
Sure.
Go ahead, Diane.
You kind of brought up the Clippers, which I think is an interesting comparison to make, just because I think that the main difference right now is that we're still in kind of that honeymoon period with the new ownership where they, I think are willing to spend a little more money right now. I think that, we're not really out of the phase where that's wearing off and kind of that urge to win now that a lot of these, new owners get, when they buy this new toy and compared to the Clippers, we know how Donald Sterling is, that's,
anybody's better than him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
he's a half a notch above Frank McCourt.
Absolutely. I think if we're looking at both, the Clippers who are looking to make some moves this year and the Warriors who are as well, I've much more faith that, Warriors ownership would pull the trigger on kind of a riskier, more expensive move, over the Clippers.
What do you see Golden State needing to go out? I mean, what is a need for them? What did they lack last year that they desperately need if they do want to continue and take that next step forward?
Well, I think that there really isn't that much more that they need. I think that looking at a team like the Denver Nuggets, who in a lot of ways are like the Warriors, we saw them nab that number three seed this past season. And I think that the Warriors could easily be there if, they really just kind of keep, kind of that formula they have going on now. If Bogey can stay healthy, which, isn't really a slam dunk, but, when we saw him play this year, you saw the offense, really moving,
Right.
Adding this new dimension.
Yeah.
And so, Steph Curry, if his ankles, stay good, he's still, he's quickly becoming, one of the top point guards in this league. So,
sure.
I think that they really don't need that much more. I think that really kind of those peripheral moves, some of those, the Carl Landry situation, someone like him is replaceable in a sense, but you always have to kind of think about, team chemistry, which they had, in leaps and bounds.
Absolutely.
Diane,
that's why I say that they're...
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Finish. That's what
that's why I say that they're in a precarious, position. So, they are in a position to make some moves, but, those little tweaks, they can make a difference when we're talking about chemistry, we're talking about offensive flow. Right. And so...
And don't you want them to kind of take chances? Yeah, and don't you want them to kind of start to take chances on not just kind of settling for a first round playoff win, but the young team, or I guess management of young teams, has to decide whether they want to depend on each player on that team getting a little bit better next year, which is going to make the difference, or whether they want to, whether they think those guys are actually maxed out in the previous year as far as their talent goes. Now I need to make some risky decisions and either get a little better or a little worse. But you're staying the same is a tough option to take.
Yeah, I think that when they moved Ellis last year,
right?
I thought that was the exact move they needed to make. And it really showed that they, I was actually pretty impressed with what they were willing to do to make this team better. And I think that they do have that great core. And I do think that there is still a lot of upside there. And so I think that Steph Curry's only going to get, I don't even think he's really scratched the surface of what he's capable of doing. I think that in 2 or 3 years, he's, first or second team All-NBA.
Sure, sure.
I want to kind of switch topics here, just keep in mind that.
Nice segue. I want to switch topics.
Yeah, I want to switch topics because there's limited amounts of time and stuff, and you want to get in and watch the game. Andy will look up the score maybe for us. Well, we'll ask you this question, but my question is that, and I want to set the set the tone here by saying that Luke is kind of the biggest LeBron James supporter here. But since he's not here and his LeBron James pom-poms aren't here and his LeBron James, you know, cheerleader outfit isn't here either, we're gonna talk a little LeBron James.
LeBron James Kleenex after last game.
Yeah, right. So all three of us, I think, kind of have drank a lot less of the LeBron James Kool-Aid than Luke has. Talk about the finals this year. Talk about the Spurs first. I think they've just been incredible. They've played incredibly as a team. Andy, what's the score right now?
43-39 Miami with 4 minutes left in the first half.
Yeah, I picked Miami in this game just because it's been every other game. But Diane, talk about what the Spurs have done this year first, and then we'll get to LeBron.
Impressed in how they've made adjustments in this series in particular. I think that one of the things that I think Luke, you know, really kind of harps on is, you know, the fact that LeBron isn't getting the calls that, you know, I think that maybe he's accustomed to. And I actually think that's one of the factors that may, you know, really be throwing the Heat off is that all of a sudden they're playing a team that he is one of the best in the league in not fouling. And so really just playing solid defense at the basket. And, you know, so you have these, you know, you have the Miami Heat, you know, driving to the basket, kind of expecting to get those calls. And so, you know, kind of, you know, getting ready for that hit and, you know, not making those, you know, easy layups. And, it, you know, I think that that's really kind of throwing off those numbers.
Sure.
When you expect contact. Numbers.
Yeah. And so I think that the Spurs, you know, really the first time that the Heat has had to play, you know, one team that's really good at not fouling them. And so I think that's one of the things that I'm seeing that I've been really impressed with the Spurs is just their ability, you know, their solid defensive effort, and it's just smart. It's smart defense.
Right, highly intelligent. It is a highly intelligent level of basketball. Pop yeah. definitely gets the most out of the talent that he has.
Is Popovich the best coach in the NBA?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, Doc Rivers has a great reputation for being, you know, up there, Thibodeau. Yeah, I think there are a lot of, you know, coaches in the conversation, but...
Mike Brown?
You know, I mean, any series, you know, any playoff series, any matchup that we could think of, I think that Pop, you know, would have the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously he has the perfect stars for his system.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about Miami. It's kind of LeBron James and everybody else as far as consistency goes. But I really feel like when you count on a big three and you have one guy that's so much better than the other two and so much more consistent, I feel like you need at least two out of those three to play great every night and then have a third who plays great, you know, half the time maybe. You look at Oklahoma City last year when Durant played great every night. Westbrook played pretty great every night. And then Harden was kind of great on a lot of nights. But when you're Miami, don't you have to have Bosch, Wade, and James all playing great at the same time to really have a chance against a team like the Spurs?
Absolutely against a team like the Spurs. I think that they, you know, have been coasting a little bit. And I think that the playoffs, you know, this year really kind of exposed the Heat as really not being one of the best ever, you know, struggling against, you know, that Indiana team, you know, losing that first game against Chicago. You know, so I think that, you know, when Miami was going through that whole streak midseason where, you know, they looked unstoppable,
yeah.
I think that, you know, we were kind of expecting them to mow through the playoffs, which really hasn't been the case. And so I think that they've really just been kind of exposed. I think that Dwayne Wade, you know, has probably lost more than, you know, a lot of us realize. I think that he really is only capable of, you know, one or two great, you know, kind of out-of-body games. Really when they need, you know, him to be playing like that every game. And then Chris Bosh, you know, I think that we are really seeing that his shooting as a player is fairly limited.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, it really is just LeBron and everyone else.
Do you see Bosch getting possibly moved in the offseason? And who could you see coming into Miami that could improve their situation if they do end up getting beat?
You know, I think assume that Bosch is the easiest fall guy if the Heat lose the series. I think that you almost kind of have to move him, you know, lest he kind of become the Pau Gasol of the Heat, you know, a good player, but really just kind of beat up on.
That's a good comparison.
Constantly just kind of, you know, I think that, and we've seen what it's done to Pau, really just kind of having to weather all of that criticism and all of those triggers. I think that, you know, we might fall into a situation where Chris Bosh is kind of in the same boat, and I don't know if, you know, he can handle that as much as Pau Gasol has. And so
he's kind of the whipping boy for sure of Miami fans. And I think Dwight Howard, if he wasn't, doesn't put so much pressure on himself, he's the same kind of player I think that Chris Bosh is, as far as like impact and being able to kind of sit back and be kind of a second or third banana is kind of where he would be most effective. I just don't think that his personality would allow it as much. Eric Spoelstra is a coach. I know you watch a lot of NBA League Pass throughout the season. What do you see from Eric Spoelstra? And then I have one other random NBA question at the end here. But talk about Spoelstra versus Popovich.
I think that, I mean, I am not terribly impressed by Spoelstra, honestly. I know that he, you know, got a lot of votes for Coach of the Year. I think, you know, there is something to having to manage that many egos. But if you actually listen to him when he's mic'd up, you know, kind of on the sidelines, you know, I really just don't see a lot there.
He has a lot of the good old-fashioned cliches and things like that. That's kind of what
like
I see out of him.
He sounds like a high school coach, honestly.
But when you're coaching that talent, isn't that kind of all you have to do, maybe? I don't know. When you're coaching a guy like LeBron who maybe coaches on the court, not to be a LeBron apologist, but I really think that he's probably – when you have LeBron, you coach a little bit differently. Just like when you have Kobe or when you have Jordan, you do kind of have to take a side seat at least, if not a back seat sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I actually – I'll just leave it at that. You know, I'm not terribly impressed with Spo. I thought that he should have gotten dumped after that Mavs series where he was thoroughly outclassed by Rick Carlisle.
Who is an underrated coach.
And I think that he made some strides since then. But I did kind of want to bring up you know, something that a coworker of mine has, you know, really believes is going to happen, and I kind of want to see what you all think. Is that if, you know, the Heat lose this playoffs, you know, lose the finals, that LeBron will be looking to possibly land at the Lakers?
Yeah, somebody said that.
Yeah, Kobe's contract.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week, I think. The possibility that in a year or two, you know, the Heat lose, the Lakers kind of have a go through kind of a ho-hum season next year. Kobe rebuilds a little bit with his ankle, and then Kobe signs for something significantly lower because his skills are significantly lower. That was definitely something that we talked about last week, but I don't see it happening just because I think LeBron's more of the East Coast, Midwest kind of guy. I don't know that he is an LA kind of guy, although he went to Miami, which is, you know, a little bit of glitz and glam. It's the closest thing to LA that you get. I just don't see... I don't see it. I think it's really hard to think about LeBron on the Lakers when Kobe's still on the Lakers.
That's just something to talk about.
If Kobe's gone or if Kobe retires, I could see it being a possibility of LeBron like opting out and coming to LA and being the guy. But a lot of things would have to fall into place, and the Lakers organization, frankly, isn't as good as Miami's organization right now as far as getting other guys and having a system. It's quietly in shambles. What's that?
Isn't the history of the NBA really just about things falling into place for the Lakers? I think that the Chris Paul, you know, David Stern veto was kind of an anomaly that, you know, really shouldn't have happened in the first place.
You're speaking like a true Warriors fan.
I'm just saying, I think that the history of the NBA really built on things falling into place for the Lakers. So I wouldn't rule that. I wouldn't rule it out.
Okay, last question for you. And it's about the NBA, and it's about some teams that I didn't get a chance to see a lot of before the playoffs. Teams like the Pacers and the Bucks, Midwest teams who are, you know, kind of small market teams that have done a lot as far as getting and accumulating some athleticism and some talent. And there were guys on the Pacers and Bucks that I watched those series and wished that, you know, half of those guys were on the Lakers. There were a lot of those players that that really impressed me. When you talk about watching different games and keeping track of different players every night, talk to me about those two teams especially, and who else should we kind of look out for as far as next year goes, and maybe some of those teams that you don't expect.
Let's see. I think that the Eastern Conference is kind of hard to keep up with, just, you know, with the price difference and all of that. But, you know, there really isn't a lot of good basketball being played in the Eastern Conference, you know, to be perfectly honest. You know, I think that we're seeing, you know, this trend has continued over the last few years with, you know, the Western Conference really just, you know, being superior in terms of, you know, teams, rosters, more exciting basketball. But let's see here. I would say I would look to see what happens with Aaron Aflalo on Orlando. He's a former Bruin, you know, great, you know, defensive talent. You know, I would like to see him be on a better team. He's someone that I love watching. I think it's always just good to, you know, kind of keep your eye on each of these teams. It's not always the best basketball, you know, Raptors, Bucks, you know, that 4:30 p.m. game. You know, I wouldn't say that you're really missing that much. Okay. I think the teams that we're missing out on in terms of, you know, what we're not able to come home and, you know, come home and watch, you know, after work and all of that stuff. You know, it's really a lot of those Eastern Conference teams that, you know, I think have really been showing that the disparity of talent is just, you know, I think it's only increased in the past few years.
Right, right. Last question, 10 seconds or less. If Miami wins tonight, who wins game 7?
Oh, Miami.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a must win for the first.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Diane Tanwakio, I pronounced that right?
Great job.
Awesome. Our newest writer at Fansmanship, and we really appreciate
Not
you joining the podcast.
Tanwakio.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we'll have you on again soon and be looking out for her articles about the NBA and everything else on Fansmanship.
Thank you, Diane.
All right.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.